My guest today is Chairman of the Board and CEO, Mr. Stanley Bergman. Stan Bergman became a member of Henry Schein more than 30 years ago, and out of a small company or mid-sized company, he built a NASDAQ company and one of the world's most largest dental companies. He had a big journey on his way with his team, and I'm very happy to talk with him about the journey and about the future of the dentists in the world. So I'm very happy to welcome Mr. Stan Bergman. This interview is, of course, in English, and I hope you enjoy the show. The guest of my show, Praxis Flisterer, is the CEO and chairman of the S&P 500, Fortune 500 company, Henry Schein. I'm very, very proud to have you, Mr. Stan Bergman, on my show.
Christian, thank you very much. It's an honor to be interviewed by you. You have a huge following, and more important, the people that follow you are key decision makers in dentistry. So it's great to be here with you today.
Thanks so much, Stan. Thanks for your time. So let me ask you one question first. Would you please tell us where you're from, who are you, and some things out of your long and very spectacular life?
I was born in a place called Port Elizabeth, which is almost the most southern part of Africa, during a very turbulent time in South African history, during the period of apartheid. I grew up in that environment. It left an indelible mark on my life. I was fortunate to grow up in a community that was multicultural. People lived in that community from all over the former British and Dutch Empire, people from all over the East, Malaysia, Malay, Indonesia, China, Hong Kong, Taiwan, all over Africa. And it was a great youth I had working or growing up in this environment, with my parents' business, right in this multicultural community, during a very challenging time in South African history. That's my background.
Okay, and then someday you decided to become an accountant, so you go to university in South Africa, right?
That is correct. Now, I grew up in a time when you listen to your parents. My grandchildren will hear this. They may not agree with me, but if my father told me to do something, I did it. And my father told me, you can do anything you want, but you got to become a medical doctor, an engineer, a dentist, or an accountant. Well, I didn't get through high school physics, didn't do so well with that. So became and entered the accounting program at the University of Witwatersrand in Johannesburg.
Okay, then you finished your degrees. And did you start working in South Africa, or what was?
In order to become what's called a chartered accountant, you have to work for an accounting firm for a few years. So I completed that, my studies in South Africa, became a chartered accountant, and then moved to the UK. My wife was a little bit involved in political matters, so it was suggested we leave. We went to the UK, it was in 1975. We wound our way to the greatest city in the world, from my point of view, New York City, 1976. Okay. Arrived here on the 200th anniversary of America, had an office in what was called the World Trade Center. Sadly, the World Trade Center was lost during 9/11 and had a view of the Hudson River as these ships came down with flags from the 200 years ago during the American founding. And it was a great experience for me. And that was my introduction to New York with the Statue of Liberty on the other side.
So it's for how long did you stay in the UK before you arrived to New York?
Just about a year. I completed accounting work there, and but I knew we always, my wife and I always knew that we wanted to live in the United States. I became what was called a CPA, a certified public accountant in the US, but it was not a very good accountant. You need to know that.
Okay. I'm not sure about that. Okay. And you started in a law firm and consulting firm, I guess, from 1976 to 1980, and then you became a member of Henry Schein, right?
Yes, very interesting. I started out, people of your generation will not understand me, but I started out in 1976 in this accounting firm in New York, went to the UK, came here, And I was an accountant for a couple of years, which went out well, went down well. And then one day the consulting people approached me. They were starting to do budgets and spreadsheets on computers that you could rent from a service bureau. This was before Apple. This was before any of the personal computers. And they needed an accountant to help them. They knew the computers. I knew the accounting. And we set up the first computerized budgets and sold those to big firms. Hard to believe that. And then what happened is one day the consultant said to me, you know, why don't you join our consulting practice? So I joined the consulting practice, and lo and behold, they made me the manager a couple of years later. And one of my clients was Henry Schein. And my job was to go into Henry Schein and put in the first computers. These were very small computers. And that began the journey with Henry Schein. Then the family said to me, you know what? We don't like paying these consulting fees. Why don't you join the company? And I said, sure, I'd be happy to do that. And they said, you join as the first chief financial officer. And I said, that's great, but I'm not a good accountant. So I said, I need my friend to join me, John Breslowski, who worked with me, and Jimmy joined. And Jimmy became the controller, then became the chief financial officer, and then built our dental business. And today is our vice chairman. We've been partners for 44 years.
Unbelievable. Jim was the same accounting company than you was?
Yes, he was in the accounting side and I was on the consulting side. But we worked together a little bit. And then he joined Schein and we put in all the computer systems, which if you look at the history a little bit, we put in computer systems into dental businesses, dental distribution companies before anyone else did. We were the first.
And back then, 1980, how many employees do Henry Schein had these days approximately?
Not approximately, precisely, 142.
Okay. Unbelievable. And do you still remember the revenues back then?
Yes. When we joined the business, it was $41 million. And that included a pharmaceutical manufacturer of about 6 months.
Okay. Okay, great. What a journey. And okay, then you started working with Jim, with Henry Schein for the next couple of years. And then what happened then? I think in 1984.
So a couple of events occurred during that period. The late Jay Schein was the chairman of the board, Henry's son, enormous visionary. He was actually the attorney for Ross Perot, the guy that ran for president, the fellow that really conceived automation of brokerage firms, big businesses. And he did that for a few years, and then his father asked him to join the business, to sell the business, to package it, to sell it. He came and he said, you know what, this is a great business, I'm staying. And he had two major visions. One was to put computers into the business. He asked Jimmy and I to join. But the second was to work on generic drugs. In 1980-81, generic drugs were not legitimate. So he, Jay, and five other small generic drug companies worked together, went to Congress to say, you figure a law to make it legitimate to manufacture generic drugs. The net result is today in the United States, over 95% of all tablets and capsules are generics. That began with Jay Schein and a few small businesses. Then the second thing that happened, at about the same time, it was alleged for the first time that a patient passed on AIDS to a dentist. So we came out with a manual, front cover, sterilize as if your life depends on it. Talking in the mid-80s to dentists about wearing gloves, masks, and cleaning between patients. So we had these two great activities. On the dental side, we put in computers, we became efficient, we introduced sterilization and infection control protocols, and on the pharmaceutical side, we became the biggest generic drug manufacturers. Then a tragedy occurred. In March 1988, sadly, Jay Schein was diagnosed with cancer. I could talk about it now, but it was very dramatic, traumatic for those that worked with him, Jimmy and I. And in November of 1989, he passed away. The family asked me to become CEO of the distribution business.
And what happened to the generic business?
That was spun off into a separate public company. Actually, Bayer of Germany became a partner, and then it was spun off. But was a completely became a completely separate business. Today, it's owned by one of the big pharma companies, but it's a completely separate business.
So, in 1989, you became CEO and chairman of Henry Schein. Do you remember the revenues and the number of employees back then?
Yes, $257 million. 400 and something, I don't remember the exact number, employees. At that point, we were only a mail-order dental distribution company. That's all we did. So what we did is we conceived a strategic plan to do a couple of things. One was to move globally and to take the Henry Schein business throughout Europe. We started out in the Netherlands, eventually made our way to Germany, the UK, Spain, France, and eventually to Australia, New Zealand, and Asia, and Latin America. So that was the first goal. The second was to enter the practice management software world to help dentists operate a more efficient practice so they could provide better clinical care using PCs. The next area we undertook was to add, to become what's called full service, add equipment and salespeople, which eventually became consultants, because today we have advisors that work with our customers. And then we entered the physician business, providing products to office-based practitioners. We also entered the veterinary space, but we spun that off into a separate company because today we want to be focused on wellness and prevention. I'd like to chat about that at this time. Wellness and prevention. And one of the key areas in wellness, of course, you know, today, through the studies, is dentistry. So we're focused on wellness through dental care, prevention, and business or helping physicians who are outside the hospital work with patients. Many procedures today are not done in the hospital, done in the office setting. That concept was conceived in 1989, 1990.
Okay. And you spread up the concept nationwide in the United States, plus you did it at the same time in the countries you expand to, like Netherlands, Europe, and so on.
It was very small businesses. In the Netherlands, well, I have to tell you, you know, the Henry Schein concept, Christian, is always about providing products at a very competitive price. High quality service, good products, competitive price. And when we arrived in the Netherlands, the prices for dental products were very, very high. So I would say I can talk about it now. The industry didn't want us there. They tried to stop us. Eventually, we bought the biggest distributor in the Netherlands, and that allowed us to get a foothold and provide products to dentists at a low price. And then we brought it into Germany, a small business. But that was done at the same time as we developed a national distribution system in the US. That time in the early 90s, we had one distribution center in the US. We moved to five, and we started building centers throughout Europe, Australia, New Zealand, Canada.
Great. So right now, you're in 31 countries, different countries right now, and you're about 18,000 employees. So, but in between, you go public, right?
Right. So we today are on the ground in 31 countries, but we service dentists and physicians practically in every country in the world, and governments, and we have 20,000 what we call Team Schein members spread out throughout the world. But we, of course, service a dentist anywhere in the world.
Okay. When did you go public?
We went public in November of 1995. The size of the business at that time was about $600 million. And the value of the company was about $270 million. And we needed the capital to continue to invest in the business, to invest in software, more value-added solutions, open up centers throughout the world, expand on our product offering. We wanted to add the complete array of equipment as well, and add technicians. And today, of course, we are the world's largest provider of equipment, and we have more technicians and the quality of our technicians, and in particular in Germany, where we lead in installing equipment and servicing equipment. We needed the capital to advance the plan.
Where do your customers come from? Is there like online channels, the offline channels? Do you, what for an impact do you see on the online channels right now?
So we believe in what's called high touch. In other words, we have about 4,000 field consultants throughout the world. These field sales consultants are involved in providing advice on practice management, not the kind of detailed advice that you provide, but talking to the dentist, you need a marketing plan, you need a plan to motivate your team, you need a plan to manage your accounting, your systems, etc. But we don't actually go into the details. We just go out and talk to the dentist about what they need. Companies like yourself get into the details and then take, you know, help the dentist in managing the practice. So that's what we believe in. We also believe in the notion that we can give you advice on the products you use, on the software you use in your practice, on banking relationships, those kinds of things is what we do. Having said that, in some countries, we also have an internet company that only does internet work without contact with a person, although most of our business today comes through the internet. Consultants will visit a practice, talk about a product, but most of the orders are ordered placed by the customer through the internet. But at the same time, we do have some businesses that are only providing services on the internet without a salesperson. And there are some customers, maybe 5%, 6% of customers that want to use that vehicle. And that's fine.
What are the most important and current trends in the dental industry?
Good question. What I'll tell you now is the same as what I would have told you before COVID. There's one difference. It's faster. So the biggest area of interest in dentistry today is the digitalization of the office. In other words, scanners are replacing impression material. Sending the information chair side to manufacture a crown or bridge, or sending the information digitally to the lab with a crown or bridge, is going to be fabricated in a digital way. That notion has advanced, is a hot topic now, and has advanced significantly during the COVID period. We still sell, of course, impression material, but the movement is very clear. The manual impression is not growing, it's going down significantly, and the scanner is going up. Chair side fabrication, for example, the CEREC units or the Planmeca units are units that have grown significantly, but CEREC is clearly the market leader in that regard. But also taking that information and sending it digitally to the lab for digital fabrication is fast moving. There is also, of course, the digitalization of the aligners, and there are many, many products. We just introduced in Germany our own product, Reveal, which is a completely transparent aligner. You cannot tell that the patient is using it. It's quite advanced, so we're just introducing that. But connecting that all digitally is very, very important. The work that implant companies do in their world, the work plan, the digitalization, the various ways in which implants are managed from a clinical point of view, all of that's moved digitally and has rapidly moved that way in the last year. Of course, we in Germany own Camlog, and Camlog has moved significantly digitally. So those are the big issues. Digitalization is huge. Of course, your listeners will know this, the whole area of infection control, which dentists were always good at, has also increased significantly. PPE, you know, the masks, the gloves, the cleaning solutions, but also the aerosol systems to take various particles out of the air, that has grown significantly as well. And dentists are really interested right now in communicating the value they bring to their patients, how to get that across digitally. So these are all the areas I think that are advancing, either as a result of digitalization or as a result of infection control resulting from the COVID.
What do you think the dental laboratories and dental practices have to prepare for? So they need the digitalization. They need to move to the aligner market, to the market where they meet their patients, and the patients will have different needs in compared to like 10 years ago. And as you said, the post-pandemic world is the only difference is it's just faster. And so what do you think? What would your advice be for dental practices to prepare for in future?
I mean, the obvious one is if you've had a digital image, you will never want your dentist to ever perform a manual impression procedure again. It's night and day. So I think moving towards digital scanning, and there are many, many, many options for that, has to be critical on every dentist list. The challenge is if you bought one of these machines 3 or 4 years ago, it's obsolete. Because like with any technology, it's moving faster, more clarity on the screen, smaller devices, like with a PC, etc. So that is, I would say, number one that people have to focus on. But also, I had a crown, and I had my crown replaced. This was 2 weeks ago. And I went in, and it was replaced literally within an hour and a half. In the old days, it would have been 2-3 visits. That's not going to sit well. At the same time, the labs will continue to play a key role. And what is important is that you communicate with the lab digitally. So crown or bridge comes back very quickly. Then the aligners. I don't believe that traditional wires or brackets are going to disappear. They will be there. But the aligners are increasing the market. But here is the danger. I'm not sure actually in Germany, but in the US, we have direct-to-consumer aligners, advertisements, and you can get your aligner through the mail. To me, I'm not a dentist, but to me, that doesn't feel right. I want to be in my dentist's office and have my dentist fit the aligners, talk to me, check the progress. And I think the dentist, the dental community is at risk because the dentists have to be more aggressive with their public relations and get the word out that dentists are the people to consult with for dentistry and not to buy something on the internet. You wouldn't buy many, many medical procedures. Take dermatology. You wouldn't buy that on the internet. You may buy a simple cream, but if you have a serious dermatological issue or you have an orthopedic issue, you don't want to do it on the internet. Having said that, it's perfectly fine to do telemedicine, which also grew significantly during COVID. That's fine, but you need on the other side to have a qualified professional, in my view. So the dentists need to be more aggressive.
I'm 100% with you. So in Germany, there are some specialized practices which just repair the D2C aligner systems for the patients got directly. So the movement of the tooth without the control of the dentist and too fast a movement of the tooth makes damage to the roots. So this is my point of view, and I know a lot of dentists, and I know a very big specialized practice. Their topic is just to repair these kind of treatments. So I'm absolutely with you that dentists need to be in the middle of the game, and not the industry does not go over the dentist and direct to the consumer. So I think we need to get the dentist in the middle of our game to make the treatment plan, to treat the patient, to make the patient happy. And I think they have the education for it, and just they have the education for it.
Yes, but I'm worried that the dentists are not there. You know, dentists as professionals are very shy. They don't advertise. They think it's bad. But the Dental Association in Germany needs to get out and explain what this is about because it's dangerous. We don't know the implications. What's going to happen to those people that had these procedures in 10 years' time? Very dangerous. Dentists need to do dentistry. And this is not something for the internet. It's very, you can very, very, you can buy your pencils on the internet, but you can't buy you can buy candy or all sorts of stuff, but not your dental care.
I'm with you. So you said the key indicator is that they digitalize their scanning, that they be on the most modern technical environment so that they can go with the needs of the patient. So what we see in Germany is that the patient comes to the dentist and say, I have some needs. I have my high-res television, I have Instagram and co, and I see all this beautiful people, and I want to have this kind of a smile, I want to have this kind of a treatment, and I have the money and I want to pay the money for it to have this kind of a treatment. And then I think the dentist must be on eye level and must be the doctor who can help his patient to make the patient feel better. What we see in Germany is that still a lot of doctors think in the first place they need to repair, they need to reduce pain, and to have white and to have aligned tooth is may good to have, but it's not in the first place. So yeah. I think this is a big change what we see in the German market right now.
Well, the dentists need to be ready for this. If the customer wants to look better, the dentists need to help, of course. They've got to fundamentally make sure that the patient is healthy first, that the teeth are taken care of. Sure. But the cosmetics are important, and they can't shy away from it. By the way, the one thing I would like to also stress to your listeners is in the last few years, there have been many, many studies that show that there's a direct correlation, a direct link between good oral care and good health care. And I'm fearful that dentists think that dentists are separate from healthcare in general. Dentists and medical doctors need to collaborate because the body, the head, is part of the body. And we know that if you take care of your teeth, you have good oral care, your pulmonary, your lungs are better, your cardiac is better, the risk of cancer is down, diabetes is down, obstetrics, you have better delivery. And there was a study 9 months or a year ago that showed that good oral care has a direct impact on Alzheimer's. So I'm afraid that the dentists are waiting for people to come to them rather than going out to the world and saying, you know, we don't just do drill and fill and smiles. We are here to help with your health. And I think that the dental associations throughout the world need to go out to the public and explain that dentists don't just do drilling and filling, but are critical for the health of the human being. For the health, which means you live a happier and longer life, and the cost of healthcare goes down.
Henry Schein is not only a partner for the environmental things. Henry Schein is, in my point of view, a partner for the practices to get this movement done, to get the next step done. Is that right?
Yeah, we are working very closely to advance in dental schools around the world, with dental associations around the world, the notion that there's a direct correlation between good healthcare and good oral care. Take care of your teeth, you live a longer and happier life. Now, the challenge is, and I don't want to pick any one country, that in some countries, the associations are a little bit shy. They don't want to go out and talk to the public. In other countries, there's a significant movement. There's TV ads, et cetera, showing them, take care of your health, your teeth, you'll live a longer and happier life. Unfortunately, in many countries, the dental associations, they want to be focused on clinical only and not in promoting the profession. But in this world of TV lines and internet one-liners, if you don't go out, you'll be crowded out.
Will Europe and especially Germany continue to be growth markets, or will much more happen in Asia in future? So keyword like demographic change and better prophylaxis.
Germany is obviously a stable market. People understand the importance of oral care. But I'll be the first to say that there's a big part of the German population that is not seeing their dentist, not having prophylaxis, not getting an implant where an implant is the right solution. So I would say that the dental market in Germany still has a long way to go. I remain very enthusiastic about the German market, because I think if you can get to the German public and explain this, the German public is very educated in general and will understand right away the importance of oral care. The question is, you've got to get to them. Now, this presents, I think, a huge opportunity for dentists in Germany. And they have to, as you know, Christian, run their practice a little bit more like a business. Of course, they have to practice high-quality dentistry, but you have to run it like a business professionally. You have to have the computers, you have to do marketing and all of that within the bounds of what the profession is allowed to do. Having said that, of course, we know the demographics. The developing world is growing faster than the rest of the world in terms of population and in terms of buying power. So Asia is huge. Japan is a very stable market. But if you leave Japan out, all of Asia presents huge growth. China's growing rapidly. 30 years ago, there was the dental profession hardly existed, but now it's becoming more and more important. And so I would say China and Asia are very, very, very important. India will also be important. It's not caught up to China in terms of awareness, but it will also grow. And then there are countries like Brazil, where for whatever reason, I don't understand why, but the culture in Brazil is cosmetic dentistry and take care of your teeth. So that's a big, big market and a big opportunity. There are other parts in Latin America. And of course, Africa presents an opportunity. There is a growing middle class and there's an understanding the importance of dentistry. So the developing world, it presents a huge opportunity, but I would also be very careful to not write off Germany or Austria or Switzerland or the Netherlands. A large part of the population are not seeing a dentist. A large part of the population don't know the importance of the dentist. And although we are the largest provider of implants in Germany, there is still a huge opportunity for implants in Germany, I think, and for all the prevention work.
Is Henry Schein in China as well?
We're in China. We started China, our journey, about 15 years ago. We have partners in China. We, in many of the big cities, we partner. It took us a while to find the right partners, to get the right management team, but we are a huge part of China. The big, I was going to say the big cities, but there's so many big cities in China. So I would say, we're in Beijing, we're in Shanghai, we're in the coastal area, we're in the west, but China is where much of the dental action will unfold. But let me assure you, it is complicated to do business in China and you need partners.
I'm sure about that. Do you see a difference about the treatment of the population in China from the dentist in order to the treatment of the population in Europe?
The Chinese public wants the best products. We do better with the high quality products in China. There's a big market for the less expensive. But for example, Camlog does very well. And Camlog is the high end, and it's a premium, but we sell at a little bit of a lower price than some of the other premium products. So we are high value. But Camlog is what's interesting to the dentists in China. They don't necessarily want the low priced implants. They sell them, but there's a desire for quality in China, and it's very interesting.
It's very interesting. I didn't expect that. So what will the dental sales look like in future? Do you see the classic sales field, or do you see more than for the just pure sales over a platform?
Yeah, so we will continue to add to our people in the field, but as specialists, as advisors on how to run your practice, on explaining technology, explaining specialty products, implants, orthodontics, liners, endodontics, bone regeneration. We will have more experts, but we'll have more salespeople, field sales consultants in the future. At the same time, communicating through social media is growing significantly. So we are in the process of investing in a whole new website, which is going to be remarkable, nothing like it in dentistry. it's much more than an ordering platform, but it'll be a marketplace for knowledge in dentistry. So that will be important. And the way to get information across to dentists will not necessarily be the catalog or the printed document, although right now, many dentists still want that. But I would say in 10, 15 years' time, the catalog will not necessarily be there. It'll all be on the internet and Instagram, all that kind of stuff. And it won't be a picture of a product necessarily. It'll be a KOL, key opinion leader, talking about a product. And it will be much more transparency. I think that dentists will be communicating. This product works, that doesn't work. This is my issue, that's my concern, this is what I like. And we need to have that information on our website, including education on how to use the product. So this is where it's all heading. We're not there yet, but I would say that a graduate of a dental school today is not going to flip through the Henry Schein catalog. They want it all online.
Do you see a threat by big tech players like Apple or Amazon to entering the healthcare market, the dental healthcare market in special?
I mean, I don't see the name you just mentioned as being an issue. There are lots of little guys with technology that have done some good work. We compete in that market, but it's the high touch that you need, the knowledge that you need. And, you know, during COVID, dentists realized how important it is, because they couldn't get enough PPE. So they had all sorts of stuff that they could buy. Those that consulted our advisors, our consultants, they didn't end up in problems. Those that just went to the internet to buy product got product that was not approved in Germany, for example, by the government. It was low quality. So I think the whole notion that you need a consultant, that you need a reliable player, you may pay a little bit extra, not a lot. It's worth it because you're going to get your products and you're going to get them with the right quality and regulatory support.
You're absolutely right. We had so many problems in Germany with a mask, with a not working mask. The government bought a lot of masks. The dentist bought a lot of masks via Amazon and other platforms, and they had a lot of trouble with it. So I can confirm that for sure. So in the first part of the interview, you said wellness and prevention is a key topic for you in future. Can you please explain me what you mean with wellness?
So I mentioned the key non-communicable diseases, cancer, cardiac, pulmonary, diabetes. And now we can include in that Alzheimer's and actually, as a result of COVID, mental illness has skyrocketed. It is, in my view, the role of the dentist to play a key part in combating all of these diseases, non-communicable. These are not going to be addressed necessarily through an operation. That's different. But the dentist is visited very often twice a year, and maybe the medical doctor is only visited if you're sick. So the dentists have a role in measuring vital signs, and today many dentists say it's not my job, but over time, dentists will have to play much more of a role in prevention and wellness. And in the other part of our business, the physician side, a lot of procedures are moving from the hospital to what's called ambulatory surgical centers outside the hospital. It's starting in Germany, but in the US it's big and it will grow. I'm pretty sure you will be in a position a year or two from now where you will have an artificial knee installed in an ambulatory surgical center and be out of the center the same day. This is where it's heading. Back operations. The CEO of one of the largest insurance companies had to have a significant back operation, and he wanted to prove a point. He was in the morning and out in the evening. This is where it's heading. And so in the medical world, you want to prevent people from getting sick, because we don't have enough resources, even in a country as rich as Germany, to take care of everyone in a hospital. You want to stop people from getting sick. You want to prevent it. And if people need procedures, You want to see if you can do them in the alternate care setting and send people home and take care of people at home. This is the movement of wellness, prevention, and moving to the lowest cost, highest quality procedure. There will be huge amounts of digitalization activities taking place in this area, and this is where Henry Schein is focused right now.
So the field of the dentist will expand tremendously. So when we see the wellness part, the prevention part, when we see like the mental health part, I think in a bite of mental health, it's do I feel okay? Do I feel good? Do I look right? Do I look good? So the field will expand from like pain helper to a doctor where the patients in Germany, the patients come in average, it's a most visited doctor in Germany. The dentists in Germany have the chance, at least in Germany, may in all the countries have the chance to talk with his her patients about all these topics and can help the patients with all the topics. This is a tremendous chance for the dentist.
I will say to you that many dentists don't want to deal with this today, but the younger dentists understand this, because they are getting a lot more training in this area at dental school. The other part, by the way, is disabilities. Dentists that graduated from dental school 10 years ago were not trained in disability. In many parts of the world, dentists that are coming out of dental school will have had an opportunity to deal with a disabled patient. And in the US, there are 60 million out of 350 million people that have disability, and they cannot find a dentist easily. So the dentists have an opportunity from a business point of view, but also from a morality point of view, from the point of view of giving back to society to treat the disabled. So dentistry needs to be broader thinking. There's a movement in the US to advance this. I would say a good one third of deans of dental schools are pushing this. Another third are listening, and another third are saying, I hope this goes away before I retire. So, but it is important for dentistry. And the young dentists, they're very interested in wellness, prevention, mental health. They are very interested now in helping with the disabled. And yes, they are interested in the environment. And they are interested if a patient doesn't have money to be taken care of, to give free dental care. This is a whole new world of this generation in their mid-20s that are graduating from dental school that are products of COVID. It's a different world.
And therefore, you need a reliable partner. You need reliable partners for the education. You need reliable partners for your praxis setup, for your praxis founding, for your praxis environment. So thanks so much, Stan, for your journey through all the years and all the things Henry Schein and you are doing. As a part of the closing formula, I would like to ask you, what has happened in the next 12 months? What are you the most looking forward to?
In the next few months, I would like to help dentists who were challenged during COVID recover, but recover in a practice that is going to be aligned with the needs of society. And the needs of society are such that same-day dentistry, people don't want to go three times, high infection control, so people know when they walk into that practice, it's some place where they're going to be taken care of and don't have to worry about infection. And I want to make sure that dentists really understand that the public during COVID expects much more of dentists, of business. The public during COVID now thinks differently and thinks that we all need to think broader, not just our technical trade, not just selling dental products, but that we have to work for the betterment of society in general. This is a movement that is key to all generations, driven by the younger people, but will become standard in the way we live our lives as a professional or as a business. The whole notion that we need to do well for our profession by doing good for society. That is very, very important. And that's a whole new mindset that is coming out of COVID. Many call it ethical capitalism. In other words, a free market, but with high ethics. And I want to make sure that Henry Schein's team understands this, that the industry understands it, and that we convey this message to the dentists. And we partner with the dentists on driving progress in alignment with society.
Okay. Stan, so great having you on my show. It's very appreciated that you take so much time of yours. I know you're so busy, and I'm so excited in advance of the interview, and you made my life so easy with this interview. And thanks so much. I appreciate your time, and keep going on your course. I know you for like 16, 18 years, and I look up to you. So thanks so much for your visions and for all what you've done for you and your team are doing for the dentist and for the dental market.
Thank you, Christian. And it's very important for you to be doing your work. We can present general concepts to dentists, but you have to help the dentist implement those ideas on how to make their practice more efficient and provide better clinical services. That's the kind of work you do. And we look forward to following your progress over the years to come.